2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Nightside.
This is the Nightside Project.
This is a twisted web. And we are not finished untangling it.
Nightside on KSL.
A limited edition spring season.
It's beautiful out there, Alex. Spring is in the air.
Yeah, so are your respiratory droplets, so stay away from me.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Welcome to the Nightside Project on this great Friday evening. I'm Ethan Millard. I've got Andy Farnsworth here with me. Alex Carey's away for the evening. And Andy, you've done a great job this week.
Well, thanks. It's been fun. But don't worry, for people who love Alex, he will be back Monday.
It's been fun. And you've been great. You've been a great host. I've been looking forward to it every night. And I just want to thank you. And I think we ought to plan to go out with a bang tonight. How about that?
Let's go out with a bang, because I like to have fun and I like to laugh. And I'm hoping to do both tonight.
Oh, yeah. We've got some great stuff coming up. But first, let's talk a little bit about some of the ways that what's been happening with all the coronavirus stuff has been changing our families. Now,
it's been changing everything.
You're right. The New York Times and USA Today both did recent surveys on how our family dynamic is changing. And they're saying that the percent of couples who say they share household chores is now 41%. That's up 15% since before the coronavirus. 56% say they share child-related responsibilities. That's up 11%. Basically, people kind of sharing the same space. It's become a little more egalitarian. That makes sense. But here's my question. Okay. Andy, do you think that's permanent? Do you think men are really now getting on the home bandwagon?
That's the real question of all of this. You know, when we look at how work is changing, and, you know, even we get emails here at KSL about some things that we've started to do since the pandemic began are going to probably remain. Some things, not all. And the question then is, you know, is your job the one that you're going to still do either part-time or full-time from home, even after this lifts? You know, it's forced us to try out new things. It's forced us to see what works, what doesn't. this might sound terrible. I think that for people who are going to continue to work from home, I do believe the chore splitting is going to stay the same.
Why do you think that sounds terrible?
Well, because it sounds totally sexist. Reasonable. It sounds sexist.
No, it's not sexist.
It's not, but it sounds that way.
I think it's a perfectly fine explanation. We all know that women do more work, even in couples where the income is split.
Where they both work.
Even if both have full-time jobs, women still do more of the childcare and more of the housework. Richard J. Petz, who's a professor of sociology at Ball State University and who is a co-author of one of these studies, he says, quote, getting men more involved in domestic work continues to be one of, if not the biggest barriers to increasing gender equality. And I agree with you, Andy, that in work from home, in families where work from home continues, I think, yes, we should expect in those families to see more fairness. But
it's so funny how the work and the home go together, because for some of the people who've worked from home, the big secret is that they got the work done faster at home, or it either meant that they were more focused at home, or that they just worked slower at work. And you know, their work took 8 hours, but maybe they were only doing 6 hours worth of work.
Yeah.
But when you're already at home and you're done with your work in 6 hours,
Yeah,
and so
for sure. But
I wonder if that's the same thing with the chore doing. Also, is that it showed it maybe to some guys for the first time they got to watch with their own eyes. Like, how could I really sit here and not help?
Yeah,
when they're doing that, and I'm done with my work, and I'm just gonna sit here.
And
here's the other question. Is it the same jobs? Are they measuring the same jobs that were done before? Or does this include like dads who were home and they decided to build that deck that they've always meant to build? Is that being counted?
No, this is regular chores.
Just regular chores.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, but here's the thing. I think that for families that no longer work from home in this way, that go back to normal, I think that the chore split will also go back to its previous norm. I don't think this is a permanent thing. And I know a lot of people out there saying, oh yeah, this is a new big awesome change, but I don't think it is because
you're a man and you know how men think.
No, it's because men don't trigger large-scale change. Women do.
Well, right.
Women do.
And they want to live with that woman and be happy.
Women, and it's
which is why they helped in the first place.
Change things. And, you know, men have kind of this inflated sense, I think, of history and of place in the world. But change comes when women are empowered to play a meaningful role. That's what brings change. And so I think that what we'll see over time is generations of women who can set aside some of the old ways and who can play a role, not just in the family, but in society, where they can step up and know that they can insist on change and that they can get change. That's what I really believe. I really think that this split in terms of household and family responsibilities is something that improves with every generation, but is not going to be improved generally with the coronavirus.
But I bet this will speed it up a little bit. I do. I think so. Once you've had a chance to do it, how then are you going to go back to, oh, well, you know, it's work and all. You know, I just don't think once you break the seal off something, it's hard to put it back in the jar.
It's going to be easy.
I think some of the men will step up because, like you said, it's a generational thing. And my generation already does a little bit more willingly than my dad's generation. Although my dad was good sometimes. But my grandma was just like, her whole focus was taking care of grandpa. Like, you know, if he was sleeping, she made sure everybody else in the house was quiet. It was, you know, it was very unbalanced as far as what today's dynamic is.
Yeah.
And it's slowly increased.
I don't think,
but I also think you're going to get women who won't accept the other way with each generation.
That's the key. That's the key right there, is what will women accept? Because if women accept that their men will slide back to the way they used to do things after the coronavirus, then guess what? There's going to be no change. And you know what? Men are going to want to slide back.
Well, of course. Nobody likes to do it. I've had this conversation with my children many, many times before and during the pandemic.
But
nobody likes to do chores.
No one likes it. But
I don't want to do it. Why? I don't like it. Nobody likes it.
But that bad behavior is only going to exist for as long as it's empowered. And, you know.
Now, that's true. But that's true of anything.
Sure.
And so it will be, will the women accept the men not doing, you know, it's hard to generalize this for me because so much depends on how's your relationship with your significant other. Like, Ethan, you may have a relationship with your wife that is different in how you see things and how you guys handle things than my relationship with my wife or Alex's relationship with his wife or, you know, anybody's with their partner that they're with. You know, my grandma, we could have said, Grandma, why are you doing all these things for Grandpa? And she would have just been like, what are you talking about? And then just told us to, and then she would have made us a sandwich and cleaned up for us. But, you know, I went to mow her lawn one time and I was like, Grandma, I got to go home and do the dishes because that was my chore. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I wish I could go do them for you. I was like, oh, I wish you could too.
You're welcome anytime. You're welcome anytime.
But it's just, It's so much of this is how's the relationship? You know, if the wife is okay with, you know, if once the husband's going back to work or, you know, vice versa.
Yeah.
I think it's one where both of them work and the dads have really gotten to see it. And I know not just my wife, but many moms working and at home, felt completely overwhelmed with the online schooling, having to handle that on top of all the household chores that were always going to be needed to be done. And then when the kids are home, they need to do it even more because they're there longer. There's more dishes. You have lunch dishes that you don't normally have. You know, they're in the house making messes that they would normally be gone from. So there was more work. You know, did the surveys take that into account, that there was actually more work to be done?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they controlled for that. But I just think so much of it is, what's the relationship like? I can see this on a relationship that's not on solid ground.
Well, but
getting worse because of this.
But the dynamics of those relationships are going to be different with every generation, because things are improving for women in every generation.
Well, and I hope that my daughter sees me helping out. I'm on the chore chart, so we didn't put my wife in the chore rotation, but I'm in the chore rotation in part because I said, look. Maybe it's just something in my own head. My thought was like if I'm home, I can't just sit on the couch and tell the kids to clean it up. Although they
Well,
I can and I do, but I feel guilty about it sometimes. And so I put myself in the chore chart rotation. So I do the same chores as all the other kids. The big difference is because I helped make the chart, I could request certain days for certain jobs.
Well, here's where I think what you're doing is smart. What you're doing is smart because I feel like for you, the question is not so much split of duties. For you, you're also trying to set an example for your kids. Right?
Yes.
And I feel like that's got to be a big part of this. So I think that the, things in the home, things in marriages will change for the better as generations of women are more empowered to insist on that change, right?
Yes.
At this point, though, men are in a weird spot because, and when I say men are in a weird spot, what I mean is, men are being real jerks. They're being real jerks about this because basically we're a generation of two incomes in many communities, many families. But we're also a generation of men who will spend their wives' money but not help them with the chores. And that is, I think a moral failing, and one that we should really, really think about. And I don't like chores either. I'm not saying that I'm perfect. Marriage is one of those things that you have the opportunity to become a better person when you focus on the right things.
That's true.
But it also has the opportunity to kind of not make you a better person if you're not trying to become a better person. I think that's one place where, you know, men can really step up and take responsibility and say, hey, I'm not going to spend my wife's money and also make her do my dishes.
I think that's a great way to look at it.
You know what I mean?
But and a lot of this, really, it's the willingness, right? Because depending on your partner, maybe they like, very generalized, maybe they like to do it. But that's just because, you know, we've been married 20 years, and so there's some things that my wife does better than me. She's a better cook, so I will cook sometimes. But here's the thing. If you want to serve two things, one tastes good and one only tastes sort of good, wouldn't you rather have the one that tastes good?
All I'm saying is, Andy, my only point is, if she's better than you at cooking, you better be better than her at cleaning toilets.
I am, and you know what? Dishes. I've always said, since we've been married, if you'll cook and make the food, I will wash the dishes.
See? Bliss.
Because I don't mind the dishes.
Right there. Right there is what you got as marital bliss.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take a break here and get a check of traffic, and when we get back, we've talked about working from home, but when you do come back to the office, the Centers for Disease Control says there could be some big changes waiting for you. And how are we supposed to improve the pandemic when blood samples are being stolen? You're not going to believe who's stealing them.
Nightside, you've had a long day. So have we. The Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
All right, coming up a little later on, we're going to do some first world problems. So start thinking about those. In the meantime, though, as we start going back to work, more and more offices opening up, things are going to change, be different, at least for the short term, at least until we kind of get a handle on the risk that comes through this disease.
things are going to be different. CDC's issued some guidelines for employers and basically with office employees, right? Yeah. Saying, hey, this is how it needs to be.
Basically, they're saying that anybody who works in an office needs to look like you're working at the drive-thru at a bank as a teller.
Yeah, so they're recommending desks 6 feet apart if that's not possible, plastic shields around desks. So basically, if you could imagine...
Probably
so
bulletproof too, right? Because you're going to want to go that.
Yeah, you definitely, yeah. But just some kind of shield there. So especially if they're like low cubicles, you would have...
welder's mask for while you're working.
So for example, in the newsroom, in the KSL newsroom are the low cubicles, right? So the CDC would recommend that you put some length of clear plastic above on the tops of the cubicles so that, you know, you're not spitting on each other. And spreading
well,
the
right,
corona.
Or a sneeze, or a cough, or a whatever.
And
if people are like my children, then the coughing into the elbow means you put your elbow in the general vicinity of your mouth and you cough around it.
Yeah,
instead of actually covering your mouth.
And then also, they're recommending that they're recommending temperature and symptom checks for arriving employees.
I've actually already heard of that being either implemented or it's in the works. Not here, as far as I know. But here's the question, though, Ethan.
That's the case, though, at my barber. When I go to my barber, I went just this last week, and he busted out a thermometer, ran it across my forehead, then sanitized it. I was good to go. I had to put on... you know, I had to sanitize and everything. I mean, you know, he had a procedure.
Right.
So at least there, they're already doing it.
You know, this has been a bad thing for me because I am all gung-ho about a lot of things at first. And then if I don't immediately see certain things happen, my effort level really trails off fast. Like if I had to cut hair and it was like, you know, scrub it all down, I would be so gung-ho and it would like last maybe a week.
Well,
hopefully two. And then eventually, if nobody's getting sick and if I'm not getting sick, then I'm like, this is a lot of work in between each haircut. Do I really need to go that far?
I know what you're saying. And that's a weird spot to be in. And I think that's part of what's frustrated people is
we don't want to see the results. I mean, it's this weird combination.
No,
we don't want it to happen. The thing we're trying to avoid, we don't want it to happen.
Well,
but then when it doesn't happen, then we're like, do we really need to do all this?
But that's exactly it. I think that's why some people are abandoning the protocols is because they've kept the protocols for a period of time, and that kept the virus out of their homes.
Right.
And they're like, well, I didn't get sick, so obviously I don't need to keep doing these things. But those things are why you didn't get sick. So there's this, and it's human nature, because I feel the same way. If there's no action, I'm like, I'm not going to do this anymore. But the reality is that those things work. I mean, we know they work, and that's...
Well, but here's the real question about changing the workflow, or changing the workplace setting. Because think about it. You know, one of the advantages of cubicle work is that you don't have to have separate offices, which take up a certain amount of space. Mm-hmm. You can then fit more workers. There's a collaborative sort of feel. I was of the generation in elementary school where they decided to try the, I think they called it open court. And that might have been something to do with the books. But instead of each person being an individual classroom, like was built all through the 60s, 50s, and et cetera, these schools that were being built at the beginning of the 1980s were, what if we have all these classrooms that are just like in one big open area with each teacher's class? You know, the chalkboards and black, there are whiteboards are on opposite sides. And so everybody's class is facing away from each other. But there's no sound barrier other than maybe some tote trays there. And now they're back to doing individual classrooms again.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's going to be something like that at work, where it's part of the advantage of having the office was for those very things. And if you're essentially having to turn those cubicles into mini offices, is it worth it? And if we do come up with a vaccine for corona, or corona becomes, you know, when it finally goes down from pandemic level, do you keep it that way? And how long? I mean, you spent the money to put it in. What do you do with it?
What do you do with all these devices? You take them
down. Stick them in a storage room?
You throw them
away. You paid for them?
I know that, but
you're
going to
just put them in the landfill?
Why on earth would you take the temperature of every employee at the beginning of the workday?
Well, that makes sense.
If you weren't in a pandemic.
You wouldn't.
No, you throw the thermometer away. someone takes it home.
No.
Right?
Yeah. They'll have some kind of sensor thingy.
Just because you do it for a little while.
They're not going to be, say, they're sensors. They're not like things you put under your tongue. They're not going to have you do a tongue thermometer every day.
No, but they're not sensors. Have you ever, so we actually have one of these. And it's a digital thermometer, and you hold it up to the forehead.
Do you touch the forehead?
Some are touch, some are no touch.
We have one of those. You start it, and then you slide it to the side.
Yeah, some of them are like little guns. So you don't actually they only have to get it within like a few inches of you. The one that we have, you set it right on the forehead. They're fantastic. You should get one. You've got kids. You should get one. They're not expensive.
I think we do. My wife's in charge of all that. See, this is how we divide up. She takes care of all the medical stuff.
I bet she has one already. You just don't know.
She has one that you go under your tongue and then it sends it to your phone.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the one on the forehead. It's super fast and it tells you stuff. Yeah. And I go with old reliable. Does the forehead feel warm? It feels kind of warm. Let me feel your back now. Oh, okay, that's really warm. And your forehead probably felt warm. So that's the Farnsworth science behind it, which is why my children are always sick. But that's a significant cost outlay for companies that are already probably hurting for revenue. You have to do it. I mean, you have to do
it. Yeah, there's no way around it. Hey,
but can
I
you just eat that cost?
Can I bring up one other thing?
Sure.
I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, put up that plexiglass. Yeah, have it up there for a while, and then eventually you don't need it anyway. It all gets thrown out. A troop of monkeys. This is out of New Delhi, India.
New Delhi. Is that where that comes from?
Yeah. A troop of monkeys snatched the blood samples of suspected coronavirus patients at a government hospital in India. A lab assistant working there was carrying blood samples due for testing when a pack of monkeys attacked the lab assistant and stole the sample box.
Do we know that the monkeys aren't developing a cure on their own? And
no,
they needed these blood samples for, you know, testing work.
Andy, they're obviously weaponizing it.
They're weaponizing it. If you look at it, they took a bite of the packets and then chucked them. But now these monkeys have had a taste for human blood.
Coronavirus blood.
Coronavirus. But so now not only are they immune.
We're not safe.
We're not safe from the Indian monkeys. Bottom of the hour news, traffic, and weather coming up. And when we get back, we're going to talk about, could you go on a roller coaster and not scream by order? We'll find out.
Easy.
Coming up on Nightside Project.
Nightside. This is the Nightside Project.
You know what you are?
What? You're difficult.
Really difficult.
You're
a difficult man.
Nightside on KSL. A limited edition spring season.
This is why I could never be a teacher. This is hard stuff.
Yeah, that and you barely graduated college.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Welcome back. This is the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard. I got Andy Farnsworth here with me. Alex Carey's away from the evening. And Andy, I wanted to hit a couple of text messages. A few people have weighed in on our recent topics.
Okay.
So on the temperature checks, workplace temperature checks, this person texted in. I'm an employee at Walmart, and they do temperature checks every day. Been doing that for well over a month nationwide. All right. That's okay. Good to know. And then on the issue of coronavirus bringing a little more equality into marriages in terms of household chores, this texture actually is sharing the solution that they use in his family.
Okay.
As far as the chores discussion in the beginning of tonight's show, one strategy that's really helped my marriage is a 50-50 split while we're at home. When I'm at work and when my wife is at home, we're giving all 100% of our energy. When we're both together, we're both sharing a 50-50 split to get chores done. If home chores is less work or the same as my work, I come home and we're both done. If chores that day is taking longer, well, now I'm home to help her carry the load. We both get done faster and now spend time together.
That's cool.
I liked that. So,
but if he is taking a long time at work, does she come to work and help him with that?
See, men are always so disrespected.
We've got to get this exactly right. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I think that's really cool. He says it makes his wife feel appreciated that she has a reliable partner, and it makes him feel like a good husband because they're working as a team. And I agree with that 100%.
I think it's a great way to look at it. And then someone else on the monkey stealing the blood. to weaponize it, we assume. Guys, that is Planet of the Apes stuff right there.
I think they're going to come up with a cure and then sell it to humanity for billions of dollars, and then the apes will truly rule.
No, man. They're going to weaponize it. Kill us all.
Weaponize it. We are immune. You are
you
not.
You didn't see the movie.
Wait.
They're not trying to collaborate. The apes? They're not trying to collaborate.
The new one or the old one?
Any of them, man.
Have you seen them? I actually liked the most recent one, the war for the Planet of the Apes, I think. That was a really good one.
All right. If you're thinking about going out and getting in on some theme park action,
yeah, we talked about Lagoon opening up this week. Yeah. I suggested that Farmington High have their graduation on the Colossus roller coaster, getting their diplomas handed to them at the top of the peak before they go down into the loop. But one of the fun things about riding Colossus, Ethan, and any roller coaster really, is when you get that feeling in your stomach on the drop, what do?
You scream.
You do. You
or
scream.
Vomit. Alternately, you scream and vomit.
Are you not both you scream, at the same time?
So do you scream? Because here's the deal. Here's where we're going with this.
I tend to laugh. Like if it's a really good ride, I will laugh like really loud.
Yeah. I'll laugh too.
But it's so the equivalent of screaming.
In Japan, is they're reopening these theme parks, and Japan has some astonishing theme parks.
They have one that goes a roller coaster that shoots through a mountain.
For the most part, everyone's being required to wear a mask, which is kind of par for course these days.
Right.
But they've also recommended, and they're also asking guests to avoid shouting or cheering on the outdoor attractions, including roller coasters, basically saying, keep your fool mouth shut. And
keep your fool mouth shut. They say that in as many words. That's what the sign in Japanese translates into.
That's right. And I think some people will not be able to do that.
No, it's impossible.
But I think that
thing, if you're already wearing the mask, are you supposed to take the mask off for the ride? That's the question.
No, you leave the mask on for the ride.
Then who cares mask if you scream?
Well, obviously Japan does. Because you're still, I don't know, man. Just don't scream. The rule is don't scream.
Okay, so you can use a combination.
My only thought
this
is
the advice for staff says, as a new style of customer service, even when you're wearing a mask, you can use a combination of smiley eyes, hand gestures, etc. to communicate with visitors. The etc. would be widely interpreted here in the United States to mean a lot of things.
Hand gestures, etc. Yeah. No, you're right.
Etc. hand gestures.
But I also think it would be weird to go to an amusement park that didn't have screaming. I mean, what if you stood there and you were watching Colossus. You were watching the fire dragon there.
That's part of the fun when you're walking into the park.
Dropping down that big drop. And then the loops. And it was dead silent.
I think
all you could hear
eerie.
Was the roller coaster. Gotta. But there was no screaming. There was no yelling. There was no none of that.
Honestly?
It'd be weird. True. It'd be like a bunch of dead bodies on there.
Yeah, that's a great thought, right? As you're walking into an amusement park.
It's like they took a bunch of dead bodies and put the little harnesses over the top of them and then ran them through.
I prefer crash test dummies, not dead bodies.
Or crash test dummies. I'll tell you what.
To dead bodies on a roller coaster. Half the fun, I'm going to be honest, walking into the you park your car in the parking lot. It's 105 degrees outside. You're already sweating as you walk just to go up to the ticket booth. But you hear those people screaming on the rides as they're going around. That's part of the fun of
fantastic.
The amusement park.
Oh, I
think
agree.
It would be. I think it would make it sound weird.
It would sound weird. It would be weirder. So not hearing the screams would be weirder than not screaming. Now, I'll tell you what. My two sons actually are not big fans of the Fire Dragon, Colossus Fire Dragon. And I'll tell you why. It's because the first time they ever rode it, this happened to each of them. They didn't ride it the first time in the same year, you know, because they're staggered a little bit.
Right.
A couple years apart. But they had that thing happen to them. Maybe you remember this from when you were a kid. But if you don't kind of keep your chin up and your head back, the G forces can kind of force your head down towards
your
knees.
Yes, it did do that to me when I was young.
And with both my sons, that ride just folded them in half.
Oh.
And they couldn't sit up.
And couldn't see the cool part of being upside
down.
They
couldn't sit all.
It took me 2 years before I could.
I looked over and all I saw was their neck folded completely down, and I could tell they were trying to sit back up, but there was no way. And they were both like, I don't see what the big deal is about that ride.
The first year it opened, there was a commercial, if you survive Colossus, you'll never be the same. And then I was like, oh, I am so riding that. And we got there and I saw that first hill. We weren't even in line. I was like, I am not riding that this year.
There's no way.
It took me a couple of years before I got up the courage. Ethan, since we're talking about travel, I did want one other thing. And this actually relates to something that we talked about earlier in the week. What do you do if you decided to, you made plans back in the middle of the winter that you're going to vacation in the Hamptons? And you've rented out a house in the Hamptons for George Costanza and his friends to come by and visit you. And then coronavirus happens. And then you find out that you can't evict renters during coronavirus. So there's some squatters who are squatting at Hamptons Mansions who cannot be evicted because of New York State law that says during this pandemic you cannot evict a renter. So a poor landlord, she's out $15,000 in rent and utilities. And not only that, they're trashing the house, Ethan.
Yeah, well,
and the police
she says,
are helpless.
Yeah, she says they're trashing the house. Who knows if they are? She's obviously not been in there.
Oh, there's video, Ethan.
And the and
if she has to trash the house herself to show that they
she's going to prove it. So, I don't know. I'm not surprised that there would be rules against evictions during coronavirus. And I'm not surprised that there would be some people who would use them to their advantage in dishonest ways. Because squatting like this is dishonest. Right?
It is.
And I saw the video of these people. You know, these squatters rolled up in some expensive cars. They're just refusing to pay. It's not like
they're like, hey, we can save some money.
And this isn't a homeless
home. Well, and some of it's two people who fled New York City.
This isn't a homeless family. This isn't a homeless family who jimmied the lock on a house to get out of the weather.
These
people probably made a down payment. They probably passed a credit check or something like that to be able to rent this house.
For 15 grand.
Now they're just refusing to pay, which is kind of a different thing, a different dynamic. So, I mean, but obviously they're refusing to pay. That's dishonest.
But you don't feel too bad for the renter, though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how many landlords in the Hamptons who, you know, got tens of millions of dollars in property? Are they given a raw deal? Yes.
Yeah.
Do they deserve their money? Yes. Am I going to really feel like lose sleep over this? No. Because they've got the money for lawyers and they'll be able to, you know, figure it all out.
I got to say, though, that's one heck of a loophole that they found.
It's a heck of a loophole. I'm going to reserve my sympathy for, like, the retired couple who's renting out their basement and has this kind of trouble. That's who I'm going to reserve my sympathy for, you know?
If you're going to squat in the Hamptons. That's all I can say.
That's right.
Checking traffic coming up when we return for the final segment of this hour of Nightside Burger Wars.
Oh, yeah.
On the Nightside Project. KSL News Radio.
Nightside. Credibility. Also absurd news. The Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
Welcome to the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard. I got Andy Farnsworth here filling in. Alex Curie's away tonight. And we'll be back next week, the Nightside Project, as usual. But it's been fun having Andy on.
Yeah.
He's done a great job, and I think everyone agrees with that. I noticed this week you got a lot of complimentary texts, Andy. People really enjoyed having you.
It was good to hear, and it's been fun. I enjoy talking to Ethan. I've always had fun talking with you on and off the air.
Yeah.
And I feel like we get good discussions going back and forth. Well,
I agree.
This is probably the most important thing we're going to talk about this week.
Oh, and it's not even close. Andy alerted me that earlier this week. And
it was yesterday.
Circumstances in the news kind of prevented us from really digging into this topic yesterday. But we're ready to now. And that is, yesterday was
National Burger Day.
National Burger Day.
Now, I got to say, I work in the newsroom, okay? And normally I do morning traffic. And this has all changed over the years, but it used to be on days like National Burger Day, burger joints would say, hey, why don't you come out and do live news from our place? And so our colleagues at Channel 5 would go out to the Habit Burger or something like that, and they'd make burgers at 5 in the morning, you know, to show how it goes behind the scenes, the fresh, you know, it was kind
whatever,
of,
yeah.
kind of an ad for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but they would bring back sacks full of burgers. And at 6 in the morning, a cheeseburger is so delicious, especially if it's still warm. So, so good. In fact,
see, that makes me want to vomit.
That's because you've never worked overnights, man.
That's, and you're exactly right. So,
if you work overnights, you learn very quickly who will make you a cheeseburger before 10 a.m. And it is a very short list.
So what time do you normally wake up like that? Like at that period of time, when were you waking up? 3 a.m.
Or I'd worked all night.
Okay. So by 9 a.m.
By 9 a.m., I'm ready for dinner, not breakfast.
Yeah. So that's why a cheeseburger tastes good.
Oh,
see,
okay.
if I got up at 7 a.m., drove straight to the newsroom.
Yes.
For a shift, and someone dropped a cheeseburger in front of me.
You wouldn't eat it.
I'd walk away. I'd stand and walk away. And I love cheeseburgers. I adore cheeseburgers. Cheeseburgers are my favorite. We cooked cheeseburgers out here on the grill just over the weekend, like so many other families did. And that's a favorite meal of ours, is when we get the charcoal grill going. And we throw down, I do one third
pound. Now, wait a minute. You're not using propane and propane accessories?
No propane. I used to have a propane grill, but I thought I'd try charcoal. So we were at the hardware store, and they had a charcoal grill. This seemed like a reasonably good one that was on, like, monster clearance. It was at the end of the year, right? I mean, we were pushing into winter, and they were like, someone buy these. And it was super inexpensive. It was like $20 or $30 for a very large charcoal grill. Now, it wasn't great quality, but I thought, you know what? I've never really tried the charcoal, so let's give it a shot. So I've been doing that for a few years. And it wasn't any kind of like moral decision or anything like that, or even a taste decision. But
it was a money decision, pure and simple.
And but it's great. So I like to get a burger, a ground beef with kind of a high fat content, right? You want at least 20% fat.
Because that's where a lot of the flavor is.
Of course. And then I do 1/3 pound patties.
I like it. I like the way you think.
And kind of make them myself, so I can make them, you know, nice and fat. But I don't want them to balloon up like a baseball. But I do want them to be kind of nice and thick all the way throughout.
Do you like to pre-cook your bacon, crumble it, and mix it in with the meat so that it cooks all the way through?
Oh, I actually have never done that. But that actually sounds amazing.
And then you get a little taste of bacon in every bite.
And then
instead of one bite and the whole slice goes into your mouth. And that's great. But then you don't have any bacon for the rest of your burger.
And then you're right, because you always run that risk of pre-cook the bacon and then you pre-eat the bacon. That's always a risk.
That is one of the risks, it's true. But,
and then each patty gets two slices of American cheese there at the end.
Yes, American cheese. My wife is a cheddar, mm-hmm. and I just disagree with that on burgers.
Cheddar's fine. I'm not going to turn my nose up at a cheddar burger. But
there's American with it.
But there is something about that American cheese that, for me, I just love so much on burgers. And when you think about it, it makes some sense. And I know a lot of people turn their noses up at it, at American cheese. Like, oh, why would you ever put American cheese on a burger?
Half of my kids are like that.
Ugh. But you know what?
They're not related to me.
But when you go to Crown Burger, what are you going to get? A cheeseburger with American cheese on it.
Yes, you are.
When you go to McDonald's, what are you going to get? American cheese. When you go to Wendy's, American cheese. When you go to Hires, what are you going to get? American cheese on
your
burger.
It's one of those things where when you ask somebody, they're like, I hate American cheese. But if you said, would you rather have your McDonald's burger without it? They'd be like, what?
No, man, with cheese.
Yeah.
In-N-Out Burger, what do you get? American cheese.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just the classic. And it makes total sense to me, and so I do it. I always have a pack of American cheese in there because for those burgers. So this weekend, we're going to honor American Burger Day. What is it?
National Burger Day.
National Burger Day.
So here's the thing. The biggest burger I've ever eaten was in New York City. It was from a place called Cozy's Soup and Burger, and it was like a slab of meatloaf.
Really?
It actually stopped me up the next day. But it was good, and I ate the whole thing. Locally, we are spoiled for burgers here in Utah. There is no question.
Yes.
I know that Crown Burger's near and dear to everyone who works at KSL and never mm-hmm. has.
Yep.
It's kitty corner to us. It's a burger. The Crown Burger with pastrami is usually either named or in the top two of the state's burgers. We got Lucky 13, which makes a whole bunch. If you've never been to Lucky 13's, it is a bar, so you have to be 21.
But it is kind of legendary there as well.
They got such great burgers. But even like Carl's Jr. Superstar with cheese, Five Guys, you can get a giant burger. We
Five Guys is great.
Spoiled. Culver's.
We are spoiled. Yeah.
You know what? We're not even going to say what's the best because there are so many
good ones. JCW's is another great one.
JCW's has some great burgers.
Yeah.
You got your choice, and I say, go have one today, tomorrow, but have one this weekend and celebrate National Burger Day from the place that made burgers famous, the U.S. of A.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right, 1 hour to go on the Nightside Project. Next hour, we've got headlines, Zen headlines, got some Star Wars information, and first world problems. We're going to need your first world problems. Start texting them in. We'll talk about those just after 7:30. It's the Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
The Nightside Project. As long as I'm with you guys, I'm always in the fake good place. Nightside on KSL. A limited edition spring season.
It's weird, though, doing the show while we're miles
That's
apart.
That's actually my favorite part. I cannot social distance myself from you enough.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Welcome back. This is the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard, and I've got Andy Farnsworth here with me. And we're getting a few texts coming in at 57500. People still dropping in some burger information.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget Millie's Burgers. You ever have Millie's Burgers? They're still there.
I've never heard of it. Where is
that
it?
It's in Sugar House. And we lived just west of Sugar House in South Salt Lake, just over the border and into South Salt Lake. And so Millie's Burger was something that we occasionally did. You know, we had seven kids growing up, and my mother's a teacher and my dad's an artist, and so, you know, we were not a family of great wealth.
Okay.
Going out to dinner was not something that we really ever did, but the Millie's Burgers, they had a burger they made that was, oh man, it was like it was one of those holdover prices. It was like, they were like 30, 40, 50 cents each or something crazy like that, to where, you know, we really could say, hey, you know what, let's get some Millie's Burgers. Anyway, Millie's is still there. It's great.
The only way to do that now is to be able to travel back in time through a portal in your back room and buy beef at 1950s prices and bring it forward. That's the plot of 11/22/63.
I know, I was going to say, nice Stephen King reference there.
Here's the thing, though. Like, even the chains are good. Like, think about this. Tony Burgers, have you ever eaten there? Delicious.
Oh, Tony Burgers is local.
Yeah.
They've got a few different places. Three or four locations. But yeah. So you remember our old Seriously Thursday nights?
Yes. And you used to go to burger places. And I was always jealous.
JCW's was a common one for us. So was Tony Burgers. We did a lot of shows at both of those locations.
Here's another text. Burgers delicious.
The Habit Burger is great, and Smash Burger.
Oh, I love Smash Burger with the wheat bread. Get the wheat bread.
Here's one. It says you need to come up north to Sunset. My Little Orange Blossom Cafe has some of the best burgers around. We smoke them, season them with our homemade seasoning, then serve them fresh. Yes, we have American cheese, but we also make a Reuben burger.
And see, a Reuben is an okay substitution for American cheese.
I like, the Reuben burger, I've always liked Reuben sandwiches, and I've always liked Reuben burgers. And you want to know why? I actually have a personal reason for that.
Because you had a cousin named Reuben?
No.
Oh.
It's not that.
Okay.
But you're close. Andy, maybe you don't know this, but some listeners will know this because I've shared the story before. But my name has not always been Ethan.
Really?
Yeah. I was first named Reuben.
Really?
Yeah, no lie. Now, I didn't have the name Reuben for very long, but I was first named Reuben.
You rebelled that young?
No, it's just no one like really liked it. They were like, yeah, Reuben. And then when I was born, it was like, They lost their enthusiasm.
What Reuben did in the Old Testament, we're like, maybe we shouldn't name you after that.
But that was actually a good lesson for me. Because then when I had my own children, I really strongly felt that we could have a short list, but they shouldn't be named until we can look them in the face.
That is a common thing, yes.
And because this is what happened to me. My family, my parents were like, yeah, man, Reuben. His name's going to be Reuben. His name's Reuben. Yeah, Reuben's here. man, Reuben is just the wrong name for this kid.
So then you went with, you named your daughter Reuben and shortened it to Ruby.
Yeah. And so that's when I got my uncle, who passed away just a couple of years after, well, several years after I was born. He passed away as a young man. He was the one that recommended Ethan. He was a big history buff and big, loved Revolutionary War history. And so he recommended Ethan. And
I do think you sound more like an Ethan than a Reuben.
You know, I've always been grateful to my uncle for offering, humbly offering that alternative.
And now we know that you make the Ethan burger.
Every few weekends, I sure do, in the backyard.
The Ethan burger sounds good. How about this one? Garlic, salt, onion powder, ground black pepper, chili powder, Montreal steak seasoning, soy sauce, and Worcestershire. That's a patty.
That's interesting.
That's got a lot of flavors working there. Soy sauce. Interesting that they do soy and Worcestershire.
So I actually use Montreal steak seasoning. So I'll get the patties and I'll liberally season them with kosher salt.
Oh,
both sides. Let that sit in, and then on the grill.
How does kosher salt taste different than regular salt?
It doesn't taste different, but it cooks up different.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't make the meat overly salty. So if you put as much salt, table salt, on these burgers as I put kosher salt, they would be unbearably salty.
Okay,
it would be
so it's
obviously
not quite as
ruined.
Concentrated as salt.
Well, it's. I'm not an expert on this. I can't describe to you how exactly the difference is, but it's more coarse. The crystals are larger, and apparently that's a part of the deal. But
so Ethan has to shop at the kosher deli to get his salt, so that he can make the perfect burger. Hey, the more quirky it is, the better.
Someone texted in, my name is Reuben. Ethan, you should have kept the name. Hey, I love the name Reuben. It's got a special place in my heart because I carried that name for a brief period. So I've always liked it. But, sometimes names just don't fit. Sometimes they just
do not
fit.
It took us an extra week before we named my fourth child.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally settled on Cameron, but it took a while.
That happened with our younger son. So with our older son, we had a short list of names. And when he appeared, when the stork brought him and dropped him off.
And the cabbage leaf was removed.
Mm-hmm. Then it was pretty clear. It was like, oh yeah, we got this right. But with my younger son, we had a short list of names, and they just did not fit. And we're like, we're not getting it. And
it is harder to name a child than you think it is before you have one.
You're right, and it's good to it's good to get an early start. I think it's smart and prudent. Plus, it's a fun way to get excited about having a kid.
You know what the problem is? Is that nothing sounds good with your last name except for names that already have your last name. Like, I know that sounds weird, but I know there's going to be some dads and moms out there that are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. So you've got your last name, and my last name's Farnsworth. That's not one that's just like, Millard. It's a couple syllables. It's, Farnsworth. It's hard. It's long. You don't want to give your kid a long first name and a long last name, or they're going to run out of spaces on the little boxes when they fill
You know what
out.
Works well with Farnsworth? Bobby Farnsworth.
Well.
Am I right? That's like the perfect name. Is one of your kids named Bobby?
No.
Okay.
But I did go with shorter names.
Except
for Cameron. Poor Cameron. He's got Cameron Farnsworth. He runs out of the boxes. You know how when you have to fill out your first and last name? He's got to leave something out every time. I'm sorry, Cameron. But, those are the things that go into it. And then you're like, I remember thinking, well, this doesn't sound right. I've never heard blah, blah Farnsworth. My oldest son, Caleb Farnsworth. I don't know. Because the only names that work with Farnsworth are like mine, my brother's, my dad's. Everybody who's already had the last name Farnsworth, that works because I'm used to it. But
trying to
pick one that doesn't sound weird at first. And then, of course, you get used to it. Now, I couldn't imagine him not being Caleb Farnsworth, but...
Yeah, of course,
At first, I was like, am I sure this is the one? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not quite sure. You're not quite sure. Well, it's...
Whoops.
I'm glad that I'm probably never going to have to go through that again.
Probably. You never know.
But I will enthusiastically weigh in on any grandkids that come my way. I'll certainly be right in there.
Telling the kids what they should name their kids.
Cheering them. No, I don't want to tell them.
But I do want to give him some guidance. And I'll say, hey, come up with a short list. But what worked for us is don't make a final determination. You can have a favorite. Don't make a final determination. Let the kid show his face. Give him that. And then come up with a name then.
We just got another text of a place I've never heard of for burgers, Ethan. Tommy's in Provo. Says they have the best chili burgers. Every place that's unique is going to have a unique kind of burger.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun. You know, you open a restaurant, you got to come up with a signature thing.
I agree.
I ate at Copper Kettle out in West Valley. They have what they call the Fat Boy, and it's a grilled cheese sandwich is one bun, a grilled cheese sandwich is the other bun. It's a lot of food, and it's absolutely delicious. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about some Star Wars and things that are making a comeback during COVID-19 here on the Nightside Project.
Nightside, we're all friends here. The Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
Welcome to the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard. We've got Andy Farnsworth here with me. And you know what? We need your first world problems. That's our segment coming up after the next news break.
Ah, yes.
Text in your first world problems.
We've already got a few that have come in.
A few have come in already. Send those in. And, you know, it's those problems, those things that really drive us crazy. And they might be kind of small, relatively insignificant in the larger scheme of things, especially considering how many other people are going through worse trials.
But man, do they tick us off.
But we also need to stop and recognize that, boy, those first world problems really are immensely aggravating. We can basically exercise them in that segment. So here's an example of a first world problem that came in already. What's wrong with those people who take their dogs in a walk and pick up the dog poop and leave the bag on the trail? Finish the job, people. I'm not going to pick it up for you. Great first world problem. So get those coming into 57500. We want to hear from you. In the meantime, you know, Star Wars fans can't just leave well enough alone.
Star Wars fans.
Well, hold on a second, Andy.
Okay.
Because I want you to listen to this because you're my closest Star Wars fan.
Okay.
And look, I like Star Wars too. I've seen every one of the movies. Right?
Have you liked them all?
Yes, I've liked them all.
Okay, good.
Okay. And, in fact, I just went back and I watched the 1, 2, 3 trilogy,
Prequel trilogy.
And I even like those. I was like, why are people dogging on these so much? They're actually kind of cool movies. But setting that aside, sometimes having the most famous film franchise in history, sometimes having days of film and television carefully crafted for you in your enjoyment. Sometimes that's not enough.
It is not enough for those of us.
And now there is
true lovers of Star Wars.
Now there's a petition online. 16,000 Star Wars fans have signed a petition calling for George Lucas to re-release the original 4-hour cut of Revenge of the Sith. And my question to you, Andy, is your name on this list of 16,000?
I have not yet had a chance to sign
it. Are you going to do it?
But now that I know of it, of course I'll sign it. See, here's how I am about Star Wars. I love it, and in some ways I can't get enough, especially of the older stuff. When they released the Blu-rays of some of the new of the original trilogy, they included a bunch of deleted scenes that had been whispered about, but never, except for some really grainy, poor quality, you'd never really seen them. And for me, that was just like as fascinating as anything because I've watched the actual movie so many times that I've seen every movement, I know every line of dialogue of the actors. So to see them in character at that age, saying and doing things that I hadn't seen before.
It'd be exciting for you.
It was awesome. So, Star Wars fans, the petition is a 4-hour cut of Revenge of the Sith, which sounds like pretty much every shot George Lucas made during the making of Revenge of the Sith.
No kidding.
They want a copy of, and they want to be able to
apparently
watch it.
Apparently it exists. Apparently George Lucas did a 4-hour cut.
an original cut.
Yeah, but he did the whole 4 hours and then he cut a bunch of things out.
But that's the thing. When you're going to go, if you're going to go back to a 4 hour cut, what you're going to end up with is scenes and things that would be duplicates of other scenes, because when they tried to figure out how to cut it down, then you end up making other choices, like saying, oh, well, you know, let's put this scene over here. This feels like a duplicate.
On the count of three, we're going to each say our favorite Star Wars movie. Ready?
Okay.
One, two, three.
Empire Strikes Back. I did like Rogue One a lot, though.
I thought Rogue One was fantastic and far and away the best Star Wars movie there's ever been.
And I actually watched, I don't know if you knew this, but right before Rise of Skywalker was released, I got to watch all nine movies in a row at the Megaplex Theaters.
Oh, you did the marathon?
I did the marathon.
Oh,
how was that? I was
Were you just sweaty and stinky?
I mean, kind of was. Yeah. But I also did, like, I did a bunch of TV shots for Channel 5 in the morning. I actually missed a good chunk of Empire Strikes Back because I was, I gave my review of Rise of Skywalker because I'd already seen it actually before the big world premiere. Since I don't know if you knew this by
review. You know what? I bet KSL loved putting on a colleague of theirs who hadn't bathed in 3 days.
You couldn't smell me though.
You
could
just
see
me.
I had my Star Wars shirt on and everything. I wouldn't want to watch a 4 hour Revenge of the Sith in the movie theaters. Let me make that clear.
Yeah, that's a home experience.
But absolutely, I would love to watch. I would love to just see what did they all have. If that was his cut of the movie, how did the story go? What was he working from when he whittled it down to what we actually got?
Well, I loved Rogue One because it really showed that that the Star Wars universe could be a long-term thing. That there was that could be a place where we could reliably get great stories. And you want to know how much I appreciated Rogue One? I was offended that it wasn't nominated for any big
Academy Awards.
Yeah, I felt like it should have been. With the amount of drama, the fantastic story, just...
It's too niche. I thought Academy Award doesn't want to... Here's the one problem with it.
It's not any more niche than any other movie, but you're right, it's because it was a space movie, because it was Star Wars, that's why it didn't get nominated, because it was just a supreme movie. I can understand that Empire Strikes Back is like a sentimental favorite for you, and I respect that.
I actually didn't like it that much when I was growing up. It's become my favorite.
But I don't think that you can really argue that Rogue One is not far and away the best Star Wars film that's ever been.
I can absolutely argue that. Absolutely, I can argue that.
Okay, let me say this. You can try to argue that.
Oh, I see. Here's the problem with the petition for Revenge of the Sith, though. The petition reads in part, "We think that George Lucas should do the right thing and give the fans what we deserve and what is rightfully ours." This is also what's wrong with Star Wars fandom, the toxic fandom. Here's the other thing. George Lucas doesn't own it anymore. Disney owns it. Disney has all the ability. If it's going to come out, if that stuff's going to get released, it's going to be by Disney, not George Lucas.
I think the best thing George Lucas ever did for the franchise was sell it to Disney.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of old school Star Wars fans would disagree with you on that.
You know, I might even
disagree with you a little bit on that.
You know what George Lucas never did, but Disney did do?
What?
Rogue One.
Oh, jeez. You're going to hammer Rogue One into that ground, aren't you? Are you excited for the series about Diego Luna's character?
Oh, yeah, for sure. All of it's great. All of it's great. And I haven't been to the Star Wars land at Disneyland yet either.
I haven't been there yet either. You can go there right now if you can get in. Get a reservation. Oh, no, God, that's going to be down in Florida. All right, Ethan, I love Star Wars, but I do want to talk about this. 12 things making a huge comeback during the pandemic. We may not get to all of them, but I need to tell you about a few things making a comeback during the pandemic. And this probably won't surprise you, most of these things. First, cereal. Shelf-stable foods. Stuff that isn't going to spoil because making it to the grocery store. My wife already, instead of going weekly, she's already to 2 weeks and she still doesn't like to go. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Home fitness equipment. 170% in sales growth during the pandemic. Can't go outside next. I heard that the Peloton, the exercise bike.
Oh, yeah.
That thing is, sales have gone through the roof.
Yeah, that's doing real well. Yep.
How about this? Thermometers. We talked about thermometers at work. They're having a big comeback at home.
I think every home needs a quick read thermometer for sure. For sure, every home needs that for this time period.
Now, this won't surprise you. Video conferencing. Of course, everybody's doing it from work. This probably won't surprise you. Handheld gaming consoles like the Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. Old school things, stuff that you already have. And then here's one, jigsaw puzzles. My wife, I kid you not, has put together probably 100 puzzles.
Yeah, and that I was love yesterday. Puzzles. No, she's I done love a lot. Puzzles. Problem is, though, we don't have the space for it.
How about this, a bidet? That was a big thing, especially at the beginning, when toilet paper was an issue.
When you couldn't get toilet paper.
Hand sanitizer, no surprise.
All the people with bidets were so smug. Now, Andy, we got to take a break here for news. We're taking first world problems when we come back. Also, we got to text something on what's on fire somewhere.
I have no idea. What's on fire in West Valley now? To clarify.
We'll find that out. Otherwise, please get us your text. First world problem. Send that into 57500. Please do that.
Nightside. This is the Nightside Project.
This is a twisted web. We are not finished untangling it.
Nightside on KSL. A limited edition spring season.
It's beautiful out there, Alex. Spring is in the air.
Yeah, so are your respiratory droplets, so stay away from me.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
All right, welcome back. This is the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard. I've got Andy Farnsworth here with me. And, good evening. Alex Keery is away for the evening. He'll be back next week. We want to do some first world problems. Do you know how this goes? Text it into 57500. Now, one thing that I forgot to do, and this is my fault, I take full responsibility for it. Because
I was going to blame you.
Because Alex isn't here, you're in place of Alex, and also Jeremy, our regular producer, is not here. And we've had a great fill-in producer, Dallin, but I'm afraid that I didn't give you guys a heads up on something.
Okay.
We actually have some music that we play during First World Problems.
Oh.
And I don't know if you've got any music up there available to you. It's Songbird. It's that, the saxophone guy.
Give us a couple seconds. We're working on it.
All right. Okay. I apologize. I take full responsibility for that. But I really wanted to mention it because I think it would be weird
to do it without it.
To do it without it. At this point, we just have been doing. We've linked that song with First World Problems for so long that
Songbird, huh?
Yeah. It's it's the saxophone guy. The saxophone
Kenny
guy.
Kenny G. Oh, I bet I could find it.
Yeah. You got it in there. It's in there. It's in the system because we play it every time. We've been playing it for years, man. It's in the system.
Okay.
Look in the system.
Look in the system. Here, I think I may have found it.
And in the meantime, get your... Yes, there it is. Get those texts coming in, 57500. We got two from Ferox. They say, first world problem, my eco-friendly reusable metal straw gets too cold to put my delicate lips on.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, that's one thing that I like about the metal straws, though. I don't like the clank. I don't like the feel on my teeth, but I like how cold they get. I do like that. All right.
The video for Songbird.
Are you also watching the video? So are you just playing it off of YouTube? Is that what you're doing?
Playing it off of YouTube.
All right. Well, be careful because this segment is probably going to go longer than the song, so you're going to need to be able to intercept it before it goes to the next video. Who knows what that's going to be?
That's true.
And then also from Ferox, my favorite pie restaurant opened their dining room today, but I gained the quarantine 15. I really shouldn't eat out.
You know what? You do it anyway. Don't let that become a first world problem.
Let it be a first world opportunity.
Exactly.
That's what you
know.
Do.
You do some things for all the people who can't. It's what I used to say, you know, when, years ago, General Conference, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they broadcast it here, but, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, you either had to go watch it on satellite if you were a member somewhere else. And so I felt it was my duty to lay in bed in my pajamas and watch it for all the people who couldn't.
Yeah. I think that was the least you could do. The very, literally the least you could do.
I literally couldn't do any less.
Here's one. First world problem. The printer had a glitch and I had to read the Sunday comics in black and white instead of color.
Oh, my. Wait, so they print out their own comics?
I guess, yeah.
I saw one. Someone in the break room keeps stopping their microwave 1 second before the timer. But the worst is if you don't clear it. You can stop it a second before the timer. But then you can't just leave it there, because so then somebody comes in and starts pressing the buttons, nothing happens, and you're like, oh, 1 second left, and then you clear it.
No, the worst is when there's like 15 seconds left, and you don't really notice, and it runs for 15 and then stops, and you didn't see how much time there was. And you're like, well, how long did this go? I don't know. Was it in for a minute, 5 minutes? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hilarious with microwaves. They can literally cook anything. They've got all kinds of design, you know, fancy things that you can do. And here's how we use them. 1 minute, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, and then you just watch it. Okay, that looks about done.
I can only buy 2 packs of meat at my local Smith's. First world problems.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
First world problem, my above ground pool is filling too slowly. It's only at 10 inches, and it needs 38 more inches. You're gonna run Copperton out of water. You're gonna run those guys dry.
First world problem, the air conditioning gets too cold, and then I have to go outside to warm up.
Oh, but isn't that a great feeling, though, when you walk out into the heat? You kind of feel your skin crackle in that desert sun a little bit.
It's a great feeling knowing that you can go right back in the house
and
get cold again.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely correct.
That is the only way. I had a first world problem. Amazon Prime sometimes takes 3 days instead of 2.
What?
To deliver me my package. I pay for 2-day delivery, and sometimes it takes 3, especially during the pandemic.
You should switch to that other option to Amazon.
What other option?
Oh, yeah. No, that is a problem, isn't it? Here's another first world problem from Brandon. Had to go to 4 Walmarts to buy my two youngest their new bikes. That is the case. If you're looking for bikes, good luck to you. Good luck to you.
People are starving in another part of the world, and you had to go to 4 Walmarts to get your son their bikes.
You know where I got a bike for my son? Because my son's been riding his bike to work.
Oh, yeah?
I picked it up at just on the classifieds. And it was great. It's a specialized rock hopper from the 90s. It's a really good bike. It's a really great condition, and I think it's awesome. So
my wife gets bikes used for our kids.
Maybe
we bought one new bike in the 20 years we've been married.
It makes the most sense, because even if it's in poor condition, you get a good deal, and then you just take it to a bike shop and pay to have it tuned up.
Well, but you think about it too. When I was growing up, bikes were like two sizes. There was the slightly smaller bike and then the full size adult bike. So my first bike was too big for me. But
yeah, I was
going to grow into it, like many other things from the 80s.
Yeah, you went from BMX bike to your dad's
old 10-speed.
Your dad's old 10-speed, yeah, 10-speed with the curled handlebars. I remember getting on that and just feeling like, how does any of this work? The tires are so skinny and I'm so high.
That's true. And then they wear out, too.
Yeah.
Because you skid them.
Oh, yeah.
All right. My problem is now that gas is so cheap, I can't decide between ethanol-free or premium. Mm. Gas is too cheap. That is definitely a first world problem.
Just pick whichever one is the most expensive. Here's another first world problem. The kids ate all my Cool Ranch Doritos.
You know what? You bought them. They should have been yours.
You need to crack the whip, man. You need to take charge in your home. First world problem, waiting for the hot water to get hot at the tap. You know, I never had this problem, but in my current house, I do. I don't know what it is, but the kitchen sink isn't that far from the water heater in the basement, but I think they run that pipe up onto the roof and then back down again. I mean, it takes so long to warm up the kitchen sink. It just annoys me. Hey, good job catching the end of the song. You going to be able to restart it?
Oh, I did already.
Okay, awesome. Well done. Let's see here. A couple of the first world problems coming in.
Can't go to a darn movie house to see a movie.
First world problem, the background music on the Nightside Project is too loud.
I fixed that.
Okay, all right. Well, at least we fixed it, because we got to go to commercial. Heaven forbid the commercials be too loud.
That's true.
First world problem, can't go to a darn movie house to see a movie. So glad you guys are back. Well, thank you.
Here's a first world problem, Ethan. The Nightside Project is only in limited edition spring release.
Oh, I know. But you know what? We'll all live. We lived without the Nightside Project once before. We'll live without it again.
We will.
All right.
All right, First World Problems. Thank you all for sharing with us the trials and tribulations that you are going through so we can all commiserate together and strengthen each other in these trying times of
getting
your Doritos eaten and your air conditioning too cold and
having to go
to multiple Walmarts to get a bike.
What did you learn on the Nightside Project? That's all there is next. So we pivot from First World Problems to what did you learn on the Nightside Project? Send those texts into 57500. And Andy, I also have a Zen headline.
I like that. We need one. It's the end of the week. Let's go into the weekend on a good note.
Nightside. Nightside. We're all friends here. The Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. The final segment of the Nightside Project tonight. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. I'm Ethan Millard. I've got Andy Farnsworth here. Andy, you did a great job all week. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been fun. I really have enjoyed it.
Very, very cool. And
it's been weird to wake up and see daylight in the sky.
It's been nice, though.
I usually don't do that. Like, year-round, getting up at 3 in the morning, you don't see any daylight in the sky.
So you're still, 3 in the morning is when you get up.
I do. But not this week. It was great.
You liked it?
I did. But it's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing that for so long. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And hey, Ethan, before you do the Zen headline, I just wanted to solve at least somebody's first world problem. Or at least give hope.
Let's hear it.
Remember the guy that said, I can't get to a darn movie house to see a movie? I kid you not. Just found out Jeff Whipple from the Megaplex Theaters. They continue to monitor studio activity out of Hollywood. And as soon as studios start to offer new content, they will likely come up with a timeline and begin a phased-in approach.
All right.
But that's one of the big seasons. You can't go see a movie. There aren't any movies to see. Nothing new's come out to theaters.
Okay, there you go.
So there you go. I hope that helps with your first world problem.
All right. Now we've got a... let's do some What Did You Learn Tonight on the Nightside Project at 57500. I learned that I can cool off while listening to the Nightside by putting ice cubes down the front of my shirt.
Hey.
That's from Bright Star.
It works.
Hey, man. Ice will cool you down every single time. Go run through the sprinklers or something.
Run through the ice sprinklers.
I learned that the next time my Star Wars obsessed friend invites me over to watch a movie, I should prepare for a 4-hour gruel.
A gruel fest, probably.
From Ferox. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right.
Ferox.
We came up with Ferox because it's spelled almost like Xerox, just an F instead of an X.
Right. Okay, I see that. I see that.
Here's another one. I learned there's a Nutella India where Nutella comes from. Great job filling in, Andy, even if you are a West Jordan Jaguar. That's from Brandon.
Oh.
All right. Keep those texts coming in. What did you learn tonight? 57500. In the meantime, Brandon actually shared with me a Zen headline on social media. So if you on Twitter, if you'll share a Zen headline, use the hashtag Zen headlines with me, then I will use it on the show. Let me just go to it here. I've got it right here. Okay, you ready for this?
Yes.
Now, we're suckers for animal stories. You know this.
We already talked about the monkey stealing blood.
Mm-hmm. A female named Joey, a female koala named Joey. Named Ash, pardon me, a female Joey named Ash, so it's a koala baby, has been hailed as a sign of hope after fires ravaged Australia's native wildlife. The Australian Reptile Park, where the first koala Joey was born since a catastrophic bushfire season devastated the country at the end of 2019 and early 2020. You remember this killed all those koalas?
That was just the fire, right?
They couldn't get out of the way of the fire, and they burned to death. Up in the trees, down on the ground.
Yeah, that was sad.
They believe this is the good news everyone has been waiting for since January. Since the fires decimated wild koala populations around the country, it's still unknown how severe the decline in population has been. But Australia's Reptile Parks Wildlife Conservation Organization, Aussie ARC, believes the next generation of koalas looks very promising.
Well, that's cool.
The zookeeper, Dan Rumsey, said, quote, "It was such an incredible moment when we saw Ash poke her head out of her mom's pouch for the first time. Ash represents the start of what we're hoping to be another successful breeding season." And that's really, really cool.
You know, it is a good reminder that even when horrible things happen, things continue. Eventually, the horrible things do come to an end.
Yeah.
You know, the fires eventually were under control. And, you know, koalas, didn't, some koalas didn't make it, but some did and some will, and they'll continue to go on.
Yep.
That's a very zen thing to think about. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm all relaxed now.
Tonight I learned, here's another, what did you learn tonight at 57500? Tonight I learned, I have a couple things in common with Ethan and Andy. First, I like barbecuing with charcoal over gas. Secondly, speaking of burgers, I used to work for White Castle when I lived in Minnesota. I was the manager for the company for 10 years. 90% of those 10 years was on overnights, so I know what Andy goes through when he works overnights. So
you know what, though, the best part was he got to work overnights and then eat White Castle burgers when he was done.
Oh, you would have loved that.
I would have loved that.
I've only had White Castle a few times.
I never have.
Just I've never really lived around it. I have, because my grandmother, my mother's from Indianapolis. And so I've occasionally been out to Indianapolis to visit my grandparents. And so that's when I've been able to try White Castle. They call them belly bombers.
The sliders?
Yeah, little sliders.
Interesting.
Yeah, and we get a whole big bag of them. And then, you know, my cousin just kind of digs in.
My cousin's husband is a manager for In-N-Out. He was here in Utah, and now he's in Texas. And she writes about their company barbecues where they pull up the In-N-Out truck and then they just serve In-N-Out burgers. All oh, that just sounds like the ideal company picnic.
But wait, I don't know if it would be, though.
It's free.
Yeah,
it's
but I kind of feel like, you know, I make these burgers all day long.
Right, and but now this time somebody else is making it for you.
I guess so. But you know what would be really amazing is if you're, you know, you work in a burger restaurant, you make burgers all day.
And then they give you pizza?
Bring a taco truck to the party. Just give us a little variety, you know. Because otherwise you show up at the company party and it smells like work and tastes like work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, I got a neighbor who owns a Vietnamese restaurant and then another neighbor who owns a different Vietnamese restaurant and another neighbor who has a taco truck.
Mm-hmm.
And the taco truck tacos are so good. So,
oh, yeah.
So good. And he sometimes rolls them out at our little 4th of July party in our neighborhood. And the thing I look most forward to about the 4th of July are those tacos.
Those tacos, yeah. Oh,
so good.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, any other what did you learn tonight? Get them in here. We've only got another minute or two. Get them in at 57500. Andy, what did you learn tonight?
I learned that monkeys will steal blood, which means they'll steal anything.
Yeah.
I learned that I need to keep the chore split. I need to continue to make the effort at home helping my wife and splitting the duties even after this pandemic is over.
Even after. Yes. It's the least that you can do.
I learned a lot of good burgers that I've got to try around the state of Utah. Sounds like Orange Blossom up in Sunset.
That's worth trying.
I need to go check out. I need to try
the Millie's burgers too.
Yep, haven't tried that. So I've learned a couple of new places to get a burger.
Here's another one. I learned Andy should be a talk show host.
Oh, thanks,
well,
Mom.
He's at the right place. KSL hires talk show hosts, so he's certainly at the right place. I didn't learn anything tonight.
You learned nothing?
Well, I know all the stuff we talked about. I already knew all the stuff.
You think that Rogue One is the best of the Star Wars movies.
Oh, but it is.
But I don't think I learned anything from that. I think I just found it out and then still did my best to respect you afterwards. I'm just kidding. The thing I love about fandom, and I co-host a podcast called the Fan Effect that's on the KSL News Radio app where we talk about these kind of things. One of my biggest things is, you know what? If you like it, you're right. If I like it, I'm right. We can both be right, and nobody has. It's not a contest to win.
Andy,
can like your stuff.
That is the silliest thing I've ever heard.
You're wrong. You can like stuff and be right. It doesn't matter. There's so many other things we can fight about. Let's not fight about if you think Rogue One is better than Empire Strikes Back, because it's not. So there we go.
I don't know, Andy. Of all the things out there to fight about, I kind of prefer to fight about Star Wars right now.
Well, thank you for having me on Nightside Project this week. I know everybody's looking forward to Alex coming back. So am I. He's one of the funniest people I've ever met, and so it'll be good to hear him here. But I appreciate you letting me have a shot, and it's been a fun week. Ethan, thanks again, and maybe we'll get another shot. Who knows?
I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. You did a great job, so thanks again. And why don't you take us out for the weekend here?
All right. That's it for the Nightside Project Special Spring Edition. Up next is Unrivaled with Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.